Hey, welcome to the banquet. Welcome to the Friday night banquet. And as you can see, the food has yet to be served. And instead of using the normal silverware, we have some alternative silverware you're going to be using. You're going to be using pins and needles. And you think, you know, you're going to use them with your fingers like chopsticks, but you ain't. You're going to be on them. You're going to be on pins and needles the entire time you're at this banquet because it's 2018. Welcome to Every Night's a School Night, number 52. Every Night's a School Night, where we watch cartoons for the explosions. Old cartoons, at least. I don't know if cartoons have kept up on that. I was thinking about that earlier, how old cartoons have so many fucking explosions. TNT, dynamite, it's just, there's so many fucking explosions and explosives and things blowing up. People getting hurt from it, too. Not killed, but getting their face just, like, nearly blown off. And, you know, you think about how often cartoon characters are depicted with, like, a face caked in black soot from an explosion, and how often their hair is out of place, and, you know, they've just been blown to pieces. Not really. They haven't been blown to pieces, but they've just been blown up, and they've managed to survive. But yeah, that's just crazy to me how explosive-oriented old cartoons are. And you have to figure that they were aimed for children. So what is it? Do children just find explosives super entertaining? I guess so, because I think about 4th of July and how fun that was for me as a kid. And we would blow up action figures and toys and just it was fun. And so maybe that's it. I don't know. But I like the idea of cartoons just being an excuse for the creators to just go full-blown pathological with this arson and explosion. And it's just insanity. You think about cartoons and it's just insanity. And I wonder if new cartoons have kept up on that. I doubt it. You know, because they don't even show Looney Tunes anymore. When I was a kid, you could pretty much be guaranteed that if you turn on the TV at any given time, Looney Tunes is either on or coming on. It seemed like it was just on loop. And what's weird about that is I didn't gravitate toward it. I didn't think like, oh, gee, Looney Tunes is on. And I feel like a Looney Tunes character saying that. Oh, gee. I didn't like get excited when it came on, but I always watched it when it was on. And late as an adult, I started to really appreciate Looney Tunes. I appreciated that I did watch it when I was younger so that I knew what was going on. I knew who all the characters were. I knew what they did. I knew all the different stories and the antics. So I'm glad that I really watched it a lot. But as an adult, I appreciated it a lot more. I was like, wow, this is actually incredible. And I also gained this newfound appreciation as an adult for Tex Avery and the Tex Avery Wolf. And I don't know if that was in Looney Tunes. Some of that stuff I get, you know, my wires mixed up a little bit. And I don't know. I feel like Tex Avery was involved with Looney Tunes, at least Warner Brothers. But I can't remember exactly who was involved in what. But the Tex Avery Wolf, where it's like this lecherous wolf where he... He holds up the glass, he orders a drink, and he holds up the glass and then gulps it down in one drink, which is too real. Too real, based on the way that I used to drink. That's me for sure. But also just the, you know, the steam whistles coming out of his head, his eyes going crazy, his tongue rolling out when he sees a woman, just this awful, lecherous beast, which once again is pretty real. I feel like men act that way. And then there was also, I think it was the same wolf, the same Tex Avery wolf. There was also the scene where he's driving in a car and he's just this absolute menace on the road. He parallel parks, but he just rams the car in front of him and then rams the car behind him. And that's, again, very realistic to me. It's a caricature, but still, it's like that's how people are on the road. Explosions, man. It's, you know, an explosion-oriented era for children's shows. You know, you think about kids getting into cartoons, too, which is kind of weird. The idea that kids are like, I'm going to like something more if it's not real. I'm going to like something more if it's drawn or if it's art. Kids just love art. They love drawings. For whatever reason, get into the idea of a moving drawing more than a live-action show. And I felt that way, too, growing up, where it's like you see a cartoon and you're like, well, I'm going to check this out. Whereas you see something live action, and unless it really speaks to you, you're most likely going to be like, "Yeah, it's boring. It's boring. Where are the explosions?" You know, that's how you feel as a kid, apparently. Because I don't remember thinking explosions were cool or anything like that. I don't remember giving a fuck about explosions, to be honest, or TNT or anything. A little bit of that. I was interested in explosives a little bit because I was also into like military stuff and war stuff and action movies. But I would say the explosions themselves were kind of just an afterthought. Even watching action movies and stuff, I was never somebody who was like, oh, I like this movie more because it had lots of explosions. You know, I liked everything that surrounded the explosions and whatever, you know, was leading up to that. But I didn't really care about just fire blowing up itself. I don't know. Yeah, cartoons are weird, though, because, I mean, it's like we live in this era where cartoons have apparently gotten safer. They've gotten a little more absurd, because you think when I was a kid, cartoons started to go in this much more absurd. Nah, that's not true. I mean, thinking about Looney Tunes, I mean, that's fucking absurd. But then when I was a kid, like things like Ren and Stimpy, Rocko's Modern Life, there was a sort of like mellow, you know, realistic, semi-realistic stuff like Doug and Rugrats. Like, even though those were like, you know, they weren't real. They weren't like real things going on. They still kind of had this air of realism to them. Like they were just telling the stories about kids, you know. It's like weird little fantasy stories about kids and growing up. And then South Park came out. And what I appreciate about South Park is that it looked shitty. And of course, it actually looked good. South Park looks good. And as they went on, they quickly started to get more detailed. And they really, it became iconic, I think I should say. You know, it started out, though, where it was like they were making it intentionally shitty. It wasn't like super stylized intentionally like The Simpsons, you know, where, you know, with The Simpsons, it was like they created this entire world that had a very specific look. And the people had this very specific look. And even though it was simple, it was very well done, and it seemed very deliberate. Whereas if you watch those early South Park episodes, even though they're, like, smooth and, like, you know, all that, it's, like, these, like, just basic shapes and colors, and it's all very primitive in that way. But it shows you, like, because there's so much in that, though. Like, you never watch, like, I remember watching old South Park when it came on, and I didn't think, oh, this looks shitty. I thought, oh, this is cool and different, which just shows you everything, all the creativity that those guys had, you know, really just, like, reinforced that simplicity or something. I don't know the best way to put it, but it made that simplicity iconic instead of just like, oh, it's a shitty-looking cartoon. But, you know, we also live in a time where adults have gotten more into cartoons. Like, cartoons used to be something that was just for kids. Oh, yeah, those things with a bunch of animals running around blowing things up, that's for kids. You know, whereas today it's like adults are really into cartoons because adults grew up also with cartoons that were more aimed at adults, like The Simpsons, like South Park, like a bunch of other things as well. So the young adults today, and by young, I mean everybody under the age of 50 practically, but they all grew up watching cartoons that weren't just Looney Tunes, that weren't just, you know, Saturday morning cartoons and things like that. They grew up with cartoons that were a little more sophisticated. I feel like all of that, like the idea of adults watching cartoons today and being so into cartoons, kind of mirrors like the infantilism of adults in general these days, where we don't really grow up. We don't have children. We get married at a much lower rate than we don't have children, or we have them very late. And we kind of stay these just permanent children ourselves, where it's like there's so many grown men going around with like Deadpool underwear and Super Mario Brothers bed sheets. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I mean, I'm infantile in my own way, very infantile, to be honest. There's just this certain type of guy that's out there, though, and they almost look like giant babies. It's not just that they're into things that they were into when they were a kid and like they can't seem to escape this cloud of nostalgia, but they kind of look like big babies and they dress like babies. And they, like I said, they have Deadpool underwear, and I don't understand Deadpool. Like, I had some Deadpool comics growing up, but I don't know when Deadpool kind of like grabbed hold of everybody, and I see bumper stickers. I actually can't believe, as someone who's sort of oblivious to this whole movement, this whole Deadpool movement, I can't believe how many Deadpool stickers I see on cars and t-shirts like adults are wearing. And I don't really know. I guess because Deadpool's like a wisecracking. I mean, I'm sure the movies are good. I'm sure they're well done. That's why a lot of this is so around so much. Because, I mean, Deadpool was always like a guy who looked cool. Like, as a kid, I didn't even know what the story was about. I was like, oh, he just looks cool. Because I was a sucker for pretty much any character in a mask. You know, you think about the era, like, where... You think about old superheroes and like the main guys, like the guys like a Superman and all those guys didn't really wear masks. And then Spider-Man started wearing a mask. And then from there, all these other main guys started to wear masks. But you think about the original superheroes and just the idea of the hero in general in stories, like way before comic books, way before anything. And you don't typically think about like the main hero being masked. But then by the 90s, it was like, oh, put the hero in a mask and he's going to sell, or put a character in a mask and he's going to be the most popular character for a week. You think about Spawn. No, I'm sure there are other examples, but there was a time where it was like, put your character in a mask and he'll have, you know, his 15 minutes of fame. But cartoons, man, cartoons, you know, they became normal. They became something that we just all watch throughout our entire lives. And it's weird to think of somebody being like, cartoons, those are for kids. Because that's just not the world we live in anymore. And sitcoms are on their way out. I think cartoons will outlive sitcoms by a long time. Although I do miss, like, cartoons looking like cartoons. Because a lot of the stuff that's on TV now, it's like that kind of simple, like the... what's the Comedy Central, Adult Swim style of doing things. There's kind of a look to it. Even if the drawings are different, I feel like there's kind of a vibe to it. Because I think it's really disappointing that Disney stopped doing animation. Because you look at some of those movies they were doing in the 90s where that level of animation is just so impressive. And then they started doing everything digitally, which I'm not going to go on a rant about, you know, digital effects and digital animation and Pixar and all that. But it's just a little disappointing that they seem to have completely abandoned that really impressive animation. Or if you watch something like Roger Rabbit from the 80s, that animation, it's superimposed on film, or however they did it. You know, it's a live action movie with cartoons in it. But they did such an incredible job. And I know I either read an article or watched a documentary or something, or what's the difference? What's the difference between reading and seeing? No, but I saw something about how they made Roger Rabbit, and it took just an incredible amount of work. And, you know, Roger Rabbit has explosions. We know that. But yeah, what I was saying about sitcoms or cartoons outliving sitcoms, it's just inevitable. I see commercials for sitcoms. I haven't watched a new one in a really long time, but I see commercials for them, and I'm like, their target audience is old people who just don't have it in themselves to give up TV yet. They are comfortable with the idea of TV, and they don't really understand the idea of watching things on your computer. And even if they have Netflix, they haven't quite gotten comfortable with the idea of TV not being it. You know, TV is just it to them. It was something that they probably experienced, like the boom of TV when TV became like the way we feel about things like Netflix, like as a culture, you know, the way we feel about things like Netflix and those HBO shows that are incredible. I think that's how baby boomers felt about just like cable TV. It was just like, holy shit, I grew up with three channels at the most. So many things changed, you know, in these people's early adulthood, like where it's like all of a sudden, like there are all these incredible shows on TV. There's so much to watch. And so they just kind of grabbed hold of that. And it wouldn't surprise me if with future generations but with my current generation in the future, I feel like a lot of us will kind of cling to like Netflix maybe long after Netflix is passé. You know, we tend to cling to things that we are comfortable with. So I think old people cling to things like sitcoms because that's what they're comfortable with. And I feel like sitcoms make an easy target. I feel like, you know, as they say, punching down. Don't punch down. I don't like senses of humor that punch down. You hear that a lot these days. But I do feel like I'm punching down if I say anything about sitcoms. And sitcoms are crazy, though. Like, when you think about especially older sitcoms, older, you know, by today's standards, it's 2018. The one I always think about is Family Matters, because I didn't watch it much as a kid, but I did see a few episodes when I was older. And Urkel's fucking insane. He's an insane criminal, is what that show is about. He's a mentally ill neighbor who breaks into their home and he just stalks and harasses their daughter. Hi, Laura. You know, it's like, I don't know if it's a good impression or not. It feels like a good impression, but, and then he refuses to take responsibility. Like, did I do that? You know, he's got that whole fucking thing down, and he's like this, I don't know what he is. I don't know what his diagnosis would be. I know they had the multiple personality character, Stefan, which was done better on Taxi with Lotka and Vic, if you ever saw that. When Taxi is a great sitcom. When DVDs were new, I asked for the first season of Taxi on DVD, and I was so proud to own that. I never bought any of the other seasons, although that show was good for a while. I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly, like, when it jumped the shark, if at all. Taxi was good for a while, because you figure later, I think it was the second season, maybe, they introduced Jim, Christopher Lloyd's character, like the old burned-out stoner. First season of Taxi, people talk about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and I can't believe that I'm just, like, talking about TV here. And, like, I did watch a few seasons of that, and I thought it was funny. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But people talk a lot about Danny DeVito's character in that. But Danny DeVito's character, Louie, in Taxi, the first season of Taxi, Louie is so fucking good. He's such a miserable little fuck. It is incredible. He does such a good job. And just the way he looks, he's up in a cage because he directs the whole garage, the Taxi garage. And he has this little, like, microphone so he can talk into that and he can just harass people. He can bother people. Talking about, like, pathology in sitcoms, which is a topic I don't really get sick of. You know, I try not to analyze sitcoms too much, despite the fact that I'm now doing a podcast about it. Louie is fucking great on Taxi. And to go back to Family Matters, though, you think, like, about Urkel, and he's like, yeah, he's stalking her and harassing this, his neighbor's daughter. I believe he goes into their home without permission. I believe that he, like, essentially breaks in and he creeps in, and he's just almost constantly just terrorizing this family. And it's kind of known that he's doing bad stuff. Like, the audience knows that Urkel is doing bad stuff, but you don't really blame him completely. You don't treat it like a horror show. You don't treat it like the horror movie that it is. It's like one, like, violent incident away from being a horror movie, really, when you think about Family Matters. And then I like the idea of it tying into Die Hard, too, because the dad, is his name Al? I think his name might be Al in Die Hard. I'm forgetting. The names probably don't match up, but either way, the dad on Family Matters plays a cop, and the same actor plays a cop in the first Die Hard movie, and I always like the idea of, like, he's being terrorized at home, his family's being terrorized by this mentally ill neighbor boy, and then he goes to work, and he has to deal with this, like, awful terror incident. So it's like terrorized at work, terrorized at home. That guy just can't catch a break. And I'm sure you could analyze just about any sitcom. I'm sure there's, like, BuzzFeed articles and, like, all kinds of, like, top 10, like, undiagnosed mental disorders and sitcom characters. I'm probably just on that level now where I'm just, like, some, what are those websites, aside from BuzzFeed, like Gawker? I don't know. Whatever websites do, like, top 10 lists and just feed into that lowbrow shit. Top 10 worst examples of manspreading in a sitcom, starting with David Schwimmer on Friends. Every episode is just David Schwimmer mansplaining. Probably. I'm sure that seems to be probably a huge thing on sitcoms. Is just, I don't know, man. I don't know. I should stop talking about that. Cartoons, explosions, sitcoms, mental illness, you know. It's all there. But we're going to play music here. We're going to play some music. And speaking of characters, these guys have a great name, Brady and Grady Sneed. I just want to say that over and over again. It might take me a while to get to the song. Brady and Grady Sneed, S-N-E-E-D. It sounds like a villain's name, like Grady Sneed. He sounds like a guy, like an evil, like some kind of tycoon. Maybe there's a show where there's like an oil tycoon named Grady who, like, you know, runs the town and fucks people over. Grady Sneed. But to make it even better, the villain, Grady Sneed, there's two of them. Brady Sneed. They're brothers, Brady and Grady Sneed. Hi, Laura. that's the name of this song. No, it's not. Brady and Grady Sneed with Little Bitty Heart. And I have to imagine if there really was a show with two villains named Brady and Grady Sneed, and of course they're twins. Since I'm doing this throwback thing, I almost imagine twins like those fucking stupid twins from the G.I. Joe cartoon in the 80s. Oh, isn't that from the 80s? The 1980? There were those twins that were bad guys in G.I. Joe in the old cartoon, and they were so fucking stupid. They had, like, early 80s haircuts, like 70s-style haircuts, and I think they were in... They just looked, you know... they were the kind of twins where you'd suspect they, you know, might, you know, do things with each other. Brady and Grady Sneed, I imagine, look like that, and this song is called Little Bitty Heart. So if they were sitcom villains or TV villains, they would have little bitty hearts. And this song isn't about Brady and Grady Sneed having little bitty hearts, but it's a great song, and it's a lot like the Everly Brothers. It's pretty much a direct ripoff of the Everly Brothers style. Whereas the Everly Brothers would be the protagonists in this story, the Sneed Brothers would be the antagonists. It would be the Everly Brothers against the Sneed Brothers. But just for the sake of finally playing this song and just appreciating good music, it sounds just like the Everly Brothers. It's just got that wonderful style, Little Bitty Heart, Brady and Grady Sneed.
Little bitty heart, stop beating like a drum. Little bitty heart, don't tell her she's the one. Little heart of mine, you beat too much. Every time I feel her magic touch, till you're sure her love is real, don't reveal the way I feel. Little bitty heart, stop beating like a drum. Little bitty heart, don't tell her she's the one. I can count the times I've cried before, but I won't be crying anymore. Till you're sure her love's here to stay, little heart, don't give me away. Little bitty heart, stop beating like a drum. Little bitty heart, don't tell her she's the one. You've been acting like a silly fool by letting her have her way. Now it's time to play it cool. Listen to what I say. Little bitty heart, stop beating like a drum. Little bitty heart, don't tell her she's the one. You've been acting like a silly fool by letting her have her way. Now it's time to play it cool. Listen to what I say. Little bitty heart, stop beating like a drum. Little bitty heart, stop beating like a drum. Little bitty heart, stop beating like a drum.
Yeah, so now we're going to be playing two songs from the second half of the 1960s. And they're going to be by a lady named Boots Till. Boots Till, which sounds like a caricature of a name. And the first song is called You Don't Own Me. And believe it or not, it's not the same as the Leslie Gore song. But as you can guess, I'm sure, it has a very similar idea behind it. Turns out when you tell someone you don't own me, it kind of has a universal message. There's not really many ways to interpret that basic idea. You don't own me. So that's going to be the first song, a completely different song, not just a different version, but a completely different song from the great Leslie Gore, You Don't Own Me, which is a great song. It gets played a lot. I remember a few years ago it was on a TV commercial. It's a great just woman's song, you know, it's a great song, but this is a different version, and there's a part of me that likes that. There's this little, like, perverse part of me. I don't know that it's perverse. I use the word perverse very liberally, by the way, which reminds me, I was going to mention this in the intro, you know, because it was already 20 minutes long, but if I had mentioned this, it would be 30 minutes long, but I was in Half Price Books. And, you know, because, you know, places like that in this day and age, especially in Half Price Books, it's actually the Half Price Books outlet. I go there to buy used CDs. They're basically like bus stations at this point. Like the level of people who are there, there's a lot of elderly people, a lot of people who are impaired, a lot of people like Urkel. There's a lot of Urkels there. And there was actually a funny story that I was telling a friend about it the other day. It happened a few months ago, but I was there one day at Half Price. And there was this guy, he seemed like he might have been on the autism spectrum. He didn't seem like super impaired. He didn't seem super, I don't know, mentally disabled. I'm trying to think of polite ways to put it. He was probably an older teenager, maybe early 20s. It was hard to place him. And he had a caretaker with him who probably didn't live with him, but would take him out because they do that. I've seen those jobs listed on Craigslist where it's like your job. You don't have to have any qualifications. You basically just take these people out, these kids out, and you just show them a good time. You show these kids a good time. Take them to Half Price Books. And so the guy was showing him movies. They were looking at movies, and his caretaker guy, whatever he was probably around my age, give or take a few years, and they were looking at movies, and the kid was asking him, like, very repetitive questions. He was like, what about this one? What about this one? He talked just like that, by the way. I'm not doing some cruel parody. Like, I've actually got his voice down really well when I was talking to my friend the other day. But he grabs Brokeback Mountain, and he was like, what about this one? And his caretaker was like, I don't think you'd like that one. And the kid goes, why not? And he was just very, you know, he was one of those kids who's going to ask why in response to everything. And the guy was like, I just don't think you'd like it. And he was like, why not? You know, it was just one of those things where it was like he wasn't going to take no for an answer. And then I think the guy was just finally like, I just really don't think you'd like that one. And I was talking to my friend about, like, what would I do in that position? Like, would I just let him get Brokeback Mountain just to save myself the grief of, like, and you might ask, like, oh, why wouldn't you let him get Brokeback Mountain? And it's like, well, for obvious reasons. You know, it just seems like if someone's like, he's looking for, like, action movies, he's looking for, like, he saw cowboys on the cover. It probably looked cool to him. It's like, oh, there's guys in cowboy hats. This is probably like a cool Western movie. And maybe it would be good for him. I've never seen Brokeback Mountain. I don't have any opinion on Brokeback Mountain. From what I heard, it was a great movie. But just, it's probably not what this guy is looking for. It's probably not. And I'm just imagining him going back to his group home and, like, the guy who runs the group home being like, why'd you get him this? You know, it's probably easier just to, like, stop him, to nip it at the bud and, like, stop him from getting Brokeback Mountain than to then have to go back to the group home and explain to, like, the group home director why he got Brokeback Mountain. Or if you don't have to explain it to the director or whatever he is, I'm just imagining this kid, like, putting Brokeback Mountain on in front of a group of those kids and them just being shocked at what it actually is, or loving it. You know, you never know. But anyway, that was an old Half Price story. Today, there was a guy standing there. He was completely bald. Like, he had, you know, he was middle-aged, like, kind of tan. His head was completely shaved. Not that that matters. I don't know why. I don't know. I like to describe people. And he had his phone was, I didn't know that he was on his phone at first. I just heard this guy looking at the movies or something about, he was in the exact spot where this Brokeback Mountain kid, now he's the Brokeback Mountain kid, but he was in the exact spot where this kid had been standing. So there's something about that spot that must be sort of magical. It's sort of a portal, toward captivating my interest at the very least. But this guy, he started talking to himself, seemingly talking to himself, and he was like, the video you put up, of you loading the carrots out of the truck, if a pervert were to hear that, if he were to listen to what you said, what do you think a pervert would think? And I was just like, whoa, what is he talking about? At first I thought it was, I wasn't really paying attention. I was looking at the dollar bin of CDs. My focus was on those and, looking at TLC CDs. There was this one TLC CD I saw. It was called Fan Mail, but at first glance I thought it said Funeral, and I was like, holy shit, there's a TLC album called Funeral. I heard this guy just talking and I'm like, whoa, what the fuck is he talking about? This like carrot, that video of you, obviously he's talking about something on social media, but he's like, the video of you unloading the carrots, like what you said in that video, you know, imagine if a pervert heard that, like what he would think you were talking about. Like that was kind of what he was saying. Pretty much that was the gist of what he said. And I thought he was either a customer talking to an employee there, or I thought it was an employee talking to another employee. And I was like, this is just a weird conversation to have with anybody, let alone an employee. But then I realized he had earphones and I could hear a voice on the other line. It was a woman's voice. I could hear, like, he had the volume jacked up pretty high and he had earbuds, like white little earbuds on connected to his phone. So he was actually having a real conversation about some video. This woman, I don't know if it was his wife, his sister. It sounded like a woman, maybe like an adult woman and not a young one, maybe like at least 35. And I could barely hear her, so I don't even know why I'm guessing her age. But you just get a vibe. I mean, that's a thing. That's real. Like, I could hear just like the faintest like buzz of a voice coming from his earbuds. But I could kind of place the general age range, which is probably like 35 to like 55. but I want to know what that video was. Like, what video? Because it's from what he was saying, it doesn't sound like the video was intentionally perverse. It doesn't sound like the video that this woman he was talking to had posted was like intentionally perverse. But whatever she was saying in it could be taken by a pervert, and that was the word he used, by a pervert. And I'm kind of surprised when anyone's not a pervert, or at least when anyone doesn't automatically think like perverted puns or perverted like euphemisms. But I can only imagine what she's saying since they're talking about carrots. I just have to imagine it's like some sort of like dick. Oh, you know, if a pervert heard what you were saying about loading those carrots, you know, he'd think you were talking about, you know, it has to be like dick related or something. I don't know. But it was just weird. And then a little while later, he was kind of quiet, just kind of mumbling to her about movies. And then suddenly, like, they started talking about some guy they know. And he was like, well, I think he went insane. Or no, it started out. No, he said that. He was like, I think he went insane. And then, like, he was like, well, he just hasn't been able to get any jobs. You know, he hasn't been able to find a job. And it's like, because he went insane. And he's like, I think he had a nervous breakdown or something. And, and he's like, and then I heard him mumble about divorce, something, a divorce. And he's like, yeah, poor guy. I feel bad for the guy. But I thought it was just funny, though, the way he was like, he went insane. He can't find a job because he went insane. It was seriously like that blunt. And the place was quiet. So like, this was the only voice in the entire store. And his bluntness too with, if a pervert heard you watch that video, like, what would he think? You know, a pervert, insane. It's like that sort of bluntness is refreshing to me. But speaking of whoever this guy was who can't find a job and went insane, the second Boots Till song I'm going to play is called Gay Divorcee. Gay Divorcee. And obviously, given the era, it means happy. I like the idea of it just being gay too, you know, gay divorcee, a woman comes out of the closet. She's a lesbian. That's what that guy would say on the phone. She got divorced because she's a lesbian. That's what that guy would say if he was talking about this woman. But no, it means gay as in happy, but maybe she's a happy lesbian divorcee. But it's a great song title, Gay Divorcee. And it's actually the song that Boots Till is known for. It's the song I think she's most well known for. It was sort of a moderate, probably regional hit. And this is the original version. There's a couple different versions of it I've heard from her, from Boots, from old Boots Till. And the first song is You Don't Own Me. The second song is Gay Divorcee. These songs go together naturally very well. You don't own me because I'm a gay divorcee.
You don't own me. I just loan me to you when you're lonely. But you don't own me. That home.
sees through my disguise. So on with the show, for they must know that home alone the gay divorcee cries. That home alone the gay divorcee cries.
Yeah, so while Boots Till's You Don't Own Me was in theory similar to Leslie Gore's famous You Don't Own Me, the lyrics kind of show that it's a little bit different, where it says, "You don't own me, I just loan me when you are lonely." So something a little darker. I would say a little on the darker end of the spectrum rather than the empowering tone of the famous song, but I didn't even think to make a Brokeback Mountain joke about gay divorcee, and now I don't need to, because simply saying that is enough. But we're going to be playing a song here. It's kind of classic doo-wop sound, really, the kind of rocking doo-wop sound from 1960, and it sounds a lot like 1960. It sounds like what was popular as far as doo-wop goes in 1960, and it's by the Tangents, and it's called Send Me Something. And though it was 1960, I think that's something that anybody today can relate to. Send me something. Send me something. Text me. That's kind of how people are now. Just send me something. I think so many people, it doesn't even matter what you send them. They just want to be sent something. I feel that way sometimes. Sometimes, you know, I mean, there are days that go by where I don't get any text messages. I'll be hanging out with people and their phone is just blowing up, as people say, like an old cartoon, like a Looney Tunes episode. Their phone is just blowing up. It's that thing might as well be a little explosive device because it's just blowing up. Who's blowing you up now? But people's phones are just going off, like when I'm hanging out with them, and I'm just amazed, like people are sending them something. And it's that catch 22 for me, because on one hand, it's like, it feels so good to get a text message just to get to see that somebody sent it to you, especially if it's somebody that like you want to hear from, like maybe a romantic interest or something. I haven't had one of those in a long time, but still that experience of like checking your phone and you see that you got one from them. They sent me something. They were thinking about me and they sent me something. You know, it's exciting, but more often than not, it's like once you get text messages, you kind of feel like, oh God, now I have to respond to this. You know, that's sort of my feeling. Like when there are some odd days where I do get a bunch of messages and I feel like this immense burden just getting back to them. And I know most of the people I know are patient. I don't know very many people who are going to be impatient waiting for a response unless it's something urgent, in which case call me. I love phone calls, by the way. If anybody ever, I'm just going to give my phone number out, in fact, 425-246-5799. I don't feel like the robots will get this far into the episode just to mine my phone number. And if they do, then those robots really care, and I would like to hear from them. But I'm so desperate now. That's clearly what this is all about. I'm clearly so desperate to hear from people that I'm giving my phone number out. But I actually would like to hear from people. In fact, you know, if anybody ever wants to hear something addressed on this show, feel free to text me or call me or email me. My email is the_harness@hotmail.com. I've had that email since I was, 15? I've had that email address for an extremely long time, and feel free to email me something. You know, I could have given out any number of email addresses, but that's like my personal email. I have my personal professional email, which is just like my name, and it's at Gmail because I don't want to seem outdated when I'm doing stuff professionally. But my real personal email is the one I just gave you. So if you ever have something you want to see brought up on here or a question, because my ultimate fantasy is honestly to have some weird little kind of Q&A or even better, like a Dear Abby sort of thing. I didn't know that Dear Abby and is it Dr. Ruth? Is Dr. Ruth like the weird sex one? The old lady talks about sex. I don't think so. Whatever. There's two famous women who gave advice, who had advice columns, and I found out they were sisters, and one of them changed her name or used a pseudonym, but they were fucking sisters, man. Blows my mind. But I would love to be like those sisters And I would love to have sort of a Q&A or a just like a Dear Abby, Dear Eric. You know, I would love to have that on here. And I would love it if you called me, too, just for anything. If you just want to talk. Watch, I won't answer. That's the thing. I gave out my phone number, and I'm, like, begging for somebody to call me. But here, I won't answer. I won't send you something. I won't even text you. I won't even text you if you text me. I won't text you back. The Tangents. And speaking of, it's a perfect name for a doo-wop group to play on this damn show because they're called The Tangents, and that's a huge part of this show. This entire episode is one big fucking tangent, and it's called Send Me Something. Send me something before I go on another tangent. Keep me focused. The Tangents with Send Me Something. Here we're almost close to 50 minutes in, and I've played like four songs. we're gonna play three more songs, though. We're gonna double it up. We're gonna play almost exactly the same amount of songs we've already played, and they're gonna be in a block, a Buddy White block. And Buddy, you know, I didn't know any buddies. Some names kind of creep in through different generations, some nicknames, things like that. I never knew any kids who went by the name Buddy. That's very old school. That's very old. I'll hear my parents talk about people they went to high school with, and they were like, Buddy. Remember Buddy? And it's like, I didn't have any buddies, man. I had buddies, but they weren't named Buddy. Buddy became too generalized. I don't like that. I wish there were specific people in my life named Buddy, not just my friends who I call buddies. Buddy singular, not Buddy plural. But Buddy White is great, and I was talking about cartoons earlier, and he has this almost cartoony voice. It's almost hard to imagine somebody singing like this and expecting to be successful or famous or anything other than a novelty. It almost sounds like comedy music. Not really to me, though. It sounds like something, like if someone were to hear this, if like a kid today were to hear this, or really anybody today, were to hear this, they would think it was a joke, or they would laugh at it. They would think it was silly. But I find cheesy things good, and I don't know that this is cheesy, but it's weird. You're weird. That's what my inbox is going to say after I gave my email address out. It's just going to be like emails from people who just say, you're weird. You're weird. But Buddy White's voice, it is weird, and that's why I like it. It appeals to me, and it actually resonates with me on more than just a novelty level. Because playing that song by The Tangents, when I was listening to it, I was thinking, you know, this is very, like, straight up and straightforward. It is, though, and I have a tendency to, like, forget to play stuff like that. Because I have a lot of stuff in the hopper. You know, I have a lot of stuff that I want to play on this show that I kind of just end up not playing because I'm like, oh, it's too normal. It's just textbook doo-wop or a textbook teen pop song, you know, that kind of thing. And I forget how good just straight up traditional, straightforward stuff is. And I always end up wanting to play the stuff that's freakishly unique. Freakishly unique. And I've got plenty of that. I've got plenty of the traditional normal stuff, and I've got plenty of the freakishly unique school night sound. And Buddy White is definitely freakishly unique, kind of a cartoony voice, but it still resonates with me personally, emotionally. I don't know what it is, but the first song is called Love Without Faith. And it's a good idea, love without faith. It's a good topic of conversation. What is love without faith? Well, as I told you last episode, love is a process, not a goal. And I mean that. You know, I know I joke around a lot, but I mean that sincerely, that love needs to be thought of as a process if you're going to get anything from it. And when you fall in love with somebody, that's not a goal. It's awesome. It's awesome if you fall in love with somebody, especially if they fall in love with you. But you're both entering into a process, and the road is going to continue, and it's going to be windy, and there's going to be hills and valleys and faith. And faith is a process, too. Love and faith are both processes. And faith is a crazy topic, man. I'm not even going to talk about it this episode. I'll talk about faith more at another time. Because I'm not talking about romantic faith, but just faith in the true, just general sense of the word. And you think about where you hear... I'm not going to talk about faith, so now I'm going to talk about faith. You think about the topic of faith, and you almost always hear it referred to, you'll hear people say like, oh, have faith, you know, if you're wanting somebody to do something and you're doubting it or whatever. But the most often circumstances where you hear it are religion and romance. The two R's, some R&R. I'm getting some R&R. It's not rest and recuperation. It's not recreation. It's romance and religion. And both of those require faith. And it's a process. It's a process with both of those things. Whether you're a religious or a spiritual person, faith is certainly a process in that. And if you're a romantic person, you know, faith is absolutely a process in that. It's not the end goal. It's not the end-all, be-all in any respect. Now, there's a lot of R's in this sentence. But anyway, Buddy White, Love Without Faith. I'm basically about to play you a cartoon character singing about this topic that I take really seriously. And the next song is another R, while we're throwing R's out there, and it's called Rainy Season. It's Buddy White, Rainy Season. Great name for a song, especially because, as you may guess, it's about emotions. It's rainy season as a metaphor. But, you know, whether it's literal or metaphorical, rainy season is a process, too. This is probably one of the most annoying annoying things I could be saying. It's just a process. It's like, oh, somebody died. Oh, it's just a process. Don't worry about it. Just going to bother everybody by calling everything a process, which it is. But the last song is Unlucky Man. Unlucky Man, Buddy White, Unlucky Man. Love Without Faith, Rainy Season. These are the things that happen to an unlucky man. So just have faith.
To go.
a little rain must fall. But since you left me, dear, it hasn't quit raining at all. My heart is slowly drowning in tears I've cried for you. So please won't you have mercy, let's start our life anew. Don't ask me to forget you, there's no one else for me. My heart is surely breaking, with you I've got to be.
A flat tire.
What up?
Bam, bam, I'm an unlucky man. An unlucky man am I. Nothing ever happened the way that I planned. I'm just an unlucky guy.
Don't try.
Dragged out my toolbox, patched up the flat, started on down the line. My pretty little cheek cut a close to my thigh. I figured everything was just fine. Then suddenly, woe is me.
You run a stop sign.
Well, well, I'm an unlucky man. An unlucky man am I. Nothing ever happened the way that I planned. I'm just an unlucky guy.
I said,
down to the jailhouse, $20 fine. Nearly made me blow my top. Then let me just a dollar to take my pretty chick rocking at the record hall. But she said, no, I can't go. I just made a date with the cop.
Buzz me, buzz.
Well, bam, I'm an unlucky man. An unlucky man am I. Nothing ever happened the way that I planned.
Unlucky Buddy. Unlucky Buddy White there. And while he may be unlucky, he does have quite a range. No matter what somebody thinks of that voice, if somebody doesn't like that voice or just finds it weird, like that email that I know is just waiting in my inbox, you're weird. You know, regardless, I mean, there's no doubt that he had some range, and there's just that incredible falsetto at the end of the first song, Love Without Faith, and then second song had that obvious Del Shannon sort of turnaround, a froggy turnaround Didn't sound like Del Shannon other than that, but he was obviously going for that Del Shannon thing that Del Shannon did in like every fucking song. That Froggy Turnaround, which is my nickname. I'm known as Froggy Turnaround. That almost sounds like the name of like a late 1960s psychedelic pop song, like Froggy Turnaround. Turn around, Froggy. It's like a song that some baby boomer would like sing to their kid to get him to go to sleep. My mom used to always sing me that song when I was little. Froggy Turnaround. Jeremiah wasn't a bullfrog. He was a Froggy Turnaround. It's also my favorite breakfast food. I want that Froggy Turnaround. I don't see it on the menu, but I want it. You know, Buddy White, though, it's like his voice does sound cartoony to me, but I feel like if grown men are allowed to wear, you know, Deadpool, Mario Brothers, hybrid underwear, Under Armour, if grown men today are allowed to wear Deadpool Under Armour and Super Mario Brothers, you know, socks, then I'm allowed to emotionally connect with a song that sounds like that, with a voice that sounds like that, especially with lyrics like from the second song, Rainy Season. You know, I don't mind a few showers, I'll try to understand, but this has been a rainy season too long for just one man. More than my share of rain has fallen on my heart. I surely need a sunny day to make the shadows part. Each day is getting longer, the nights are twice as bad. Please end this stormy weather, I've never been so sad. Those are the actual lyrics, you know. The nights are twice as bad. That resonates with me. It really resonates with me. And speaking of nights, you know, the last three songs were by Buddy. Three buddies. And the next song is just going to be one song, but it's by the Three Pals. So while we just had three buddies, we're now going to have the Three Pals. And they're going to be talking about Night 2. They don't talk about the nights being twice as bad, but the song is called Nighty Night. And it's a good closer. Anytime you say Nighty Night, it's a good last thing to say to somebody. I don't care if you're hanging out with your old football coach from high school. Instead of saying goodbye, say Nighty Night. Nighty Night, coach. It doesn't matter who you're talking to, whether you're talking to a cop, whether you're talking to, you know, your girlfriend, whether you're talking to the president, not the president of the United States, but the president of the Taekwondo Association. When you say goodbye, say nighty night, because that's what we're saying here. Nighty night. The Three Pals with Nighty Night. And you should go to bed because tomorrow's Saturday morning, and that means cartoons. Although I honestly don't know if Saturday morning cartoons are still a thing. I assume they are. I have faith that they are. However, I don't know that they are. But I don't have faith that they still have explosions. I do not have faith that Saturday morning cartoons are filled with the explosions of yore. The explosions of yore. Can't think of anything more poetic to close this to close this episode out. So just let your mind just glow with the explosions of yore. Because the nights are going to be twice as bad. Nighty Night, the Three Pals. Kaboom.
Don't be late, for I'll be dead. You better. something borrowed and something blue. Tomorrow is our wedding day.
Tomorrow.
On our wedding day.
Tomorrow.
On our wedding day.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong. With the help of God, I know I can be strong to make this land our home. If I must fight a fight to make this land our own, until is mine.